Welcome to episode 474 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we put you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Yeah, we're playing with that one a little bit.
Yeah, we're playing a little bit with that intro there, because we want to make this a little bit more obvious about what exactly it is that we're talking about here. And just saying that we cover consumer entertainment technology, that's kind of boring. It's kind of stiff. It's kind of lame, right? So let's get a little bit more to the point. Speaking of getting to the point, we got some feedback. We got a tweet from Larry, which ended up becoming our featured story. So we'll get to that in a second. He really just sent us a link. But instead of that, we've also got some email. Well, one in particular from Rob W. This was sent in to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Actually, because that email address is super long to type, Rob just went to the website and used the contact form. You should do that too. So Rob says, "Hey guys, first, thanks for the recommendation to play through Quantum Break. This was an awesome experience in game mechanics, storytelling, and overall fun. The live action episodes at the end of each chapter were really well done and engaging, such that I found myself making gameplay choices that ensured that I saw more of Lance Reddick. I played on the hardest difficulty and completed 100% of the game. Prior to the last boss, I had only died 6 times. I ended up with over 80 deaths. So take that for what it's worth." Wow. Yeah, that last boss was tough. Real tough. Now on to some Netflix stuff. He says, "In reference to your Netflix price increase discussion, my view is that Netflix would be a great deal at over $20 a month. It seems that no matter how much I watch, there's always at least 10 shows in my queue. It's only because the price started out so artificially low, probably to build subscribers, that it now seems like too much. But that seems to be the modus operandi for every Silicon Valley startup."
True, true.
"People usually watch HBO for only a couple of shows, but have no problem paying $15 a month because it's always cost that much. These are just my thoughts. Love the show, guys, and I'll keep it shorter next time." Rob, you don't have to keep it shorter. That was a great message. First off, I'm glad you loved Quantum Break. I think it's one of the most underrated games on the Xbox, maybe one of the most underrated games of this console generation. It was really, really good. So I'm glad you enjoyed it too. And you're obviously way better at video games than I am, because I never, ever would have tried to play it all the way through on the hardest difficulty setting.
Oh, I thought you were going to say because you had a much higher death count.
Oh, well, I'm sure that was true too. But Richard, on the Netflix topic, do you agree here? Like, do you think that the cost of Netflix is artificially low, and that, I mean, would you be willing to pay? Now, let me take a step back. I want to ask you this question as a Netflix user, not as a Netflix shareholder, which you are. As a Netflix user, would you be willing to pay over $20 a month for Netflix?
I think I do already, but
what?
That's because I add a disc to my subscription. So I have the most expensive plan that they offer already so that I can get UHD content. And I have the discs, and we've already done the terrible math on that, if you recall. So yeah, I can see this. You know, the funny thing is, this weekend I was talking with a friend of mine, and she was saying that she's actually thinking of canceling Netflix. And I think part of the problem is that it's so chock full of unknown Netflix originals and kind of either lacking or hiding third-party content that many people who just don't care about Netflix content are interested in, that it's less interesting to her. For me, I love the Netflix originals. I hate the idea that we have exclusive content. I hate that. But for the most part, their content has been pretty good, at least the stuff that I've watched. So yeah. And you know, the HBO point, quite valid. Furthermore, mm-hmm. HBO doesn't charge you more every so often as they continue to increase their quality from standard definition to high definition and from stereo to surround sound. And I suspect when we get to the point that we get to 4K or higher definition content, you know, that might get tested, but we'll have to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are great points. Now, for me personally, I wouldn't pay $20 a month or more for Netflix, but it's only because we don't use it a ton. We use it. So, you know, frankly, I would love to see our numbers because I watched some Netflix right after we finished recording last week because someone in the chat, now I'm forgetting which lovely person it was, someone in the chat pointed out a Netflix original movie that had Kristen Bell in it, and that was called Like Father, I think. And I couldn't resist, and I started watching it as soon as we were done recording and watched about half of it before going to bed. But I haven't watched any Netflix since, and it's been a week, and I'm pretty sure no one else in my family has either. So no, I wouldn't spend more than $20 a month for it. And I do know a lot of people who have said, Netflix feels the same as Amazon Prime to me in terms of video stuff. And I'm always going to have Prime for the shipping. So I know a lot of people who have cut Netflix because they don't feel like they're getting anything out of it that they're not already getting from Amazon Prime. And they're definitely not cutting Amazon Prime.
Well, if that's the case, then I think it, again, gets back to that originals thing. Do the originals mm-hmm. matter to you or not?
Right, right. Yeah, that's super important. All right, well, let's move on to our featured story of the week. And for the first time in, I would love to know the answer to that, too. A really, really long time. our biggest story of the week is about Windows Media Center.
Well, let's just say it has a Windows Media Center impact.
I think it has a far bigger impact on Windows Media Center than the product that it's getting all of the news around. At least I think so. So the news that everyone else is reporting on is that Microsoft is taking away some functionality. If you're reading the honest headlines and stuff, it's taking away some functionality from Windows Media Player inside of Windows 7. That's not the whole story. It's just the one that seems the most relevant because they think that lots of people are using Windows Media Player in Windows 7, and they probably are. And there's 700 million people still using Windows 7, even though in less than a year, it will no longer be a supported operating system. Well, what Microsoft is doing is removing an online service that goes out and retrieves metadata for you when you use Windows Media Player and Windows Media Center to watch something. If you're not sure what getting that metadata means, the easiest example that I can think of is if you were to stick a CD in your computer, yep. And maybe no one does this anymore, but when you stick a CD in your computer and it recognizes what the CD is and then pulls down all of the track information, the artist information, the album artwork, all of that stuff. What I think this story means is that it's not going to do that anymore. And this isn't just for CDs. This is theoretically all kinds of metadata, right? But we don't really know for sure. The one good thing about this is it doesn't impact any metadata that you already have on your computer. You know, if you've got a bunch of ripped CDs and stuff like that, ripped music on your Windows 7 PC or on a NAS and you're accessing it through Windows Media Player or Windows Media Center, all of that metadata is already downloaded and it's not going to go away. But anything new that you add, you know, new albums come out every Friday, anything new that you add, it won't get metadata for it. You'll just have blank stuff and it'll be practically useless unless you go in and edit it all yourself. Where this is extra scary is in the Windows Media Center part of this, which while this only impacts Windows Media Player users who are on Windows 7, this impacts all of the existing versions of Windows Media Center from 7 onward. So Windows 7, Windows 8, and Windows 8.1, if you're using Media Center, it's not getting any new metadata. And that also means if you were to build a new Windows Media Center PC or something like that, maybe you need to refresh your machine or something along those lines, you're not going to get metadata anymore. So, Richard, the big question is, what about guide data, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've had guide data scares pretty much annually for the last 5 years. And I wonder if we're going to get to the point where if they're retiring this, then they're also expecting that the next time that they have a guide data problem, they just kind of turn it off. Or are they likely to announce a sunset? We haven't heard anything in terms of a sunset date for guide data. I think the last kind of unofficial word we had when we spoke with the Microsoft team that was working on updating how guide data gets delivered was that they would support it as long as Windows 7 was supported.
Yeah, that is what it sounded like. I don't think guide data is currently impacted right now. I'm not running Media Center anymore. Last week, you talked about how you shut down your Media Center for the last time. But I went over to the most popular enthusiast community site that I can think of, and that's the Green Button. And that forum always has posts when there's a guide data outage. And there was nothing like that over there. Now, granted, there's a whole lot fewer posts happening over there than there used to be. There's not a lot of recent posts. But if no one was getting guide data, it would be reported over at the Green Button. I'm pretty sure of that. And it
wasn't.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it would be more visible because there are no other posts.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think all of our Windows Media Center fans who listen to this show would be telling us that they're not getting guide data anymore. So this is a little scary. I mean, maybe not scary, but it's not cool. And it's yet another sign that if you're still using Windows Media Center as your home entertainment center solution, maybe you were thinking you've got a year to find your new solution. But this tells me you don't, because you're probably adding content fairly regularly. And now if you're just ripping movies and stuff, maybe you're getting the metadata for that on your own from other sources, but you're not going to want to do that for everything.
Yeah, like I tend to think that you need to heed the warning here, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, check out some of the other options. We talk about Plex here a lot. If you're more interested in the DVR aspects of Windows Media Center, Plex is an option. HD Home Run is an option and is kind of the only option if you're doing cable card with protected content on Windows Media Center, or TiVo is your other option there. You've also got some of the maybe lesser used software solutions that can do some of this stuff through some of these tuners, like Kodi will do it, and I don't know, lots of these other guys will. And then, of course, if you're just doing over-the-air stuff, you could switch out wholeheartedly and go to something like a ChannelMaster DVR. You could go to Tableau, or maybe you just stop using TV tuners altogether and end up with some sort of streaming solution like YouTube TV or Sling, PlayStation View. I mean, there's lots and lots and lots of options out there. But if you're using Windows Media Center, you've got to start analyzing those well now.
And, you know, something I feel almost obligated to say, just because we don't really ever talk about it, except perhaps in a passive or passing way, more and more cable providers are starting to adopt what seems to be continually reported as the best cable service DVR solution out there, which is X1. And that's the DVR solution and kind of combined DVR and streaming solution available through Comcast. Other providers are starting to license and use that because it's so popular.
Mm.
So, you know, if you're still on the cable side of things, I haven't tried it personally. I don't know what it's like these days. What I do know is that I have never liked the remote controls that come with most cable boxes. And many people who have the X1 rave about the voice control and how easy it is to control this box.
Right. Yeah, we're not only cord cutters here. I may be a cord cutter, but Richard isn't, and I know a lot of you aren't. As much attention as cord cutting gets, still the vast majority of Americans are getting their television through pay TV services like cable and satellite. So we're not writing you guys off either, just because we talk a lot about cord cutting. Maybe you are switching to primarily streaming and services like that, in which case maybe you're using an Xbox One to watch all of that content. And if so, you might really like the little Xbox One media remote. And yeah, that's getting a new feature.
And frankly, if you are using the Xbox and you don't have a universal remote control that is programmed to control that Xbox, why aren't you using the Xbox One media remote? Because it is a great solution that the whole family can use to control the Xbox for content.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it'll turn on your devices. It will control volume. I mean, frankly, that's all most people need. Like, can I get to all of the apps and can I turn the volume up and down? Yes, yes, perfect. And it lights up when you move the remote in case it's dark and you're not sure where the button is that you're looking for.
Even better.
And it's like $20.
The combo doesn't do that.
Yeah, so the Xbox One media remote is awesome, but it's getting even more awesome. What's the cool new awesomeness, Richard?
The cool new awesomeness is that the One Guide button is getting a programmable feature. So you'll be able to determine what you want that One Guide button to do. And you might ask, but why only that button? Well, I don't know. I think this sends another pretty big message from Microsoft that they're still trying to figure out what to do with One Guide, because the intent of One Guide was to be that integrated guide for your TV content. Remember, from your cable box that you plugged into the input, and that, oh, and they were going to have a DVR. Oh, but they didn't do so.
Well, they did do the tuner, though. Some people still have the
They have
tuner,
okay,
over the air tuner.
Yes, the single USB. What was it, a Hotpog tuner?
Yep, yep.
By the way, everybody, it's pronounced Hotpog. All right. Let's just get that down. So, yeah, you're going to be able to program this to do something else, something more useful for you, perhaps. But it is only that button at this point. They're not giving you kind of like free rein to just reprogram all of the buttons.
Right.
This is just, you know, the funny thing about this isn't funny. It's sad, but it's good for you if you don't use the One Guide. It's kind of sad in that it's another sign that Microsoft is retreating from TV content on your devices.
I guess in some ways, sure. But you could also program this button to be your Netflix button or your Sling button, and that's TV content. It's just not the same kind of TV content.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Well, sticking with our video stories tonight, Roku is doing something that, well, some of their competitors have been doing for a little while. And frankly, this is something that their competitors do that I've never really understood why it's that big of a deal. They're allowing you to subscribe to other premium services, think like Showtime, Stars, Epix, through them, like through Roku. You can pay for Showtime, watch it on your Roku, but it's just, you're just watching Showtime. Like, there's nothing extra special there.
I know why. It's because it's so easy to use the Roku remote to do anything with the on-screen keyboard.
I have a feeling you're being sarcastic, Richard.
Yeah. I mean, I get why people do this, right? If you're a customer and you want to watch something and you have the ability to just right there, right then, subscribe and say, yes, I want to watch this right now enough that I will subscribe to Stars to watch it right now, then why lose the opportunity to get that customer? Also, there are a lot of people who don't necessarily want to have to deal with signing up for a whole bunch of different separate services, getting bills for each one of them. This kind of consolidates all of that. And I know that this has been really popular on Amazon service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there is definitely an ease of use factor here. I think that's really the biggest thing. It's all one account. You just use your Roku account for all of it. It's one bill. The services are easy to cancel. So that is all really good. We've mentioned Showtime Stars and Epic or Epics. Is it Epics? I think it's Epics.
Yeah, Epics.
There's other services too, but you may not care about any of them, which is why I'm not going through the list of like a dozen other services that are offered here.
Oh, let me guess. Curiosity Stream.
Probably. I don't
CBS.
Remember.
All the things I want to pay extra money for. Not.
Right. HBO is not in this list. That's one that maybe you do want to pay extra for, but it's not there.
That seems like a missed opportunity.
Right. Netflix isn't in this list. I don't know if maybe you can already do that, but I doubt it.
Well, but think about this, right? There's a difference there, right? Netflix is primarily a streaming account that's already there as an app.
Right.
Whereas these services offer content and programming that might not otherwise be available to you, depending on what you have, what you use. So, these are like the online versions of the traditional cable channels. And many of them offer, in fact, live streaming of the channels themselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's one big downside to going this route. Most of these services that you would be subscribing to also have their own apps on lots of other platforms. If you were to sign up for Showtime through Roku, you can't use your Roku account to sign into the Showtime app on your phone or on your Xbox or on any of your other devices. You can only watch it through Roku. And that's kind of annoying. The kind of okay way of getting around that in some cases is that you will be able to watch these things through the Roku mobile app on your phone or tablet, at least on iOS right now. On Android, that's not available yet. That's not coming until February at some point. So that could be a big enough reason for some people not to do it this way. But
it's pretty much the same way everyone else is doing it, though.
Is the same true for Amazon?
The same is true for Amazon and Hulu and all of the other services that are allowing you to access content from third-party services through their streaming service.
I thought that when I had signed up for Showtime, I did it through Amazon and was able to watch it on other things, but maybe I didn't do it through Amazon. I must not have.
So I want to find out if I'm wrong on that. I know that this is the case with Hulu for sure.
Mm.
I was under the impression that it worked the same way on Amazon. So, yeah, I'd love to hear from someone if they know otherwise.
Yeah. All right. Well, they're probably not going to give us an answer right now, so we should move on to the next story. This one, it's really a cool story that I think our listeners might have missed and might want to go check out on their own. I'm not really going to get into the full details here, but one of the editors over at Engadget wrote a really nice piece on his attempts and eventual success at trying to use HDR, high dynamic range video, in Windows 10. And there were a whole lot of issues. Even now, in 2019, it's not a super simple thing to do. It's a lot more accessible than it was, say, a year ago. The most recent versions of Windows 10 natively support it. The customization around it is a lot better than it used to be. The hardware is more accessible. Most of your discrete GPUs that are out there that you would consider buying nowadays support HDR already, so that's cool. Any Intel CPU that's Kaby Lake or newer automatically supports this with the integrated graphics, so that's good. But the monitor situation still isn't great. A lot of the computer monitors that are HDR capable aren't super bright. The ones that this Engadget editor got to test topped out at 350 nits of brightness. That's not even as bright as a lot of the cheap HDR 4K TVs that are available. And that thing was like a $1,000 monitor.
I would ask, how bright do you want this when you're 2 feet away from your eyeballs?
Well, but if it's not as bright, you're just not getting as much out of it as you could be. I mean, that's part of the point. It's not the only point. It's the one that most people talk about, myself included, but it's not the only point. So it's a really interesting read. Like I said, he did get it working. He also talks about HDR gaming, which was actually in some ways easier to achieve because just getting HDR content on a PC is kind of a pain. You want to do Netflix? You can only do it in the Netflix Windows 10 app or in Edge. You can't do it in Chrome. You want to do HDR video from YouTube? You've got to do it in Chrome. You can't do it in Firefox. Like, there's all sorts of limitations like that. And even then, he had some hiccups. Like, he's got this crazy powerful computer, and he could watch HDR YouTube, but not at 4K video. His Chromecast Ultra does 4K HDR video just fine. Why couldn't his $1,500 laptop do it? So really interesting read. We'll, of course, have a link to that over in the show notes. Mentioned YouTube a little bit there. YouTube TV had a kind of a big announcement, and this has to have been timed specifically for the fact that we're just a few days away from the biggest television event of the year. That, of course, is the Super Bowl. YouTube TV, this is their online streaming paid TV service, their live TV service, similar to cable TV, now covers pretty much all of the U.S. This was a service that previously you had to live in specific areas to be able to get it. Now it's pretty much everywhere. It's well over 90% of America is covered, and over 90% of customers can also get local network stations through YouTube TV. And that's important if you want to watch the Super Bowl, because that's on network television. People like to say, oh, you need to sign up for these big expensive streaming things to watch the Super Bowl. You don't. It's on network television. All you need is an antenna. If you're within range of an antenna of a tower, you can watch the Super Bowl for free. But it is worth mentioning there. So again, YouTube TV, it's pretty full featured, you know, right up there with all of the rest of the big competitors. It's $40 a month. You get 6 YouTube accounts that can connect to this thing simultaneously, and they have their quote unquote unlimited cloud DVR. So there you go. YouTube TV, if you've been waiting for it to come to your area, it's probably there now.
And just like the other things that we were talking about, YouTube TV also offers these additional subscriptions that you can add to your service to get things like Showtime and so on.
Right. Yep. All right. Another big video news story from the week, Hulu. This is a double-edged story. The good news is that if you just want super basic Hulu service, they reduced the price from $8 a month to $6 a month. And that's just awesome. Like, there is nothing bad that you can say about that.
No, that's great.
The downside is, if you want Hulu's live TV experience, it went up in price by $5 a month. So that wasn't as heavily reported, but yeah. So I think everyone wanted to make a big deal out of the fact that, you know, a week after Netflix talked about raising their prices, that the direct Hulu competitor actually reduced their prices. So a little bit of good news, a little bit of bad news. Not really sure that there's much else to say about that, though.
What I don't remember is what's included in the Hulu basic subscription. I know that I'm paying more so that I don't have commercials, But is there still a commercial laden version of Hulu content, but it's like the larger library than you would get from, say, Yahoo?
I think in terms of the Hulu on demand sort of service, there's only been two levels of it for a while. And it's just, you can have everything with commercials, or you can have everything with almost no commercials.
Okay. All right. And then, well, I mean, and to be clear, no commercials is still almost
commercials.
You still have the preceding commercial in some cases, but that's kind of interesting. I mean, $6, geez, that's nothing.
Yeah. In fact, I'm looking at the Hulu site now. They don't even view those as separate plans. It's just, you can do Hulu, which is the video on demand service. And then if you want, you can add on the no ads service, or you could add on HBO and things like that. So getting rid of the ads is just an add on to Hulu. So there you go.
And that basically, and so here's, let's put this in perspective, right? That's what CBS All Access is charging just for CBS. Right. Hulu is giving you NBC, Fox, and ABC content, as well as some of their child networks.
Mm-hmm. Right? And their own originals, like The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's still on my list to watch at some point when I have far less to do than I do now.
Right. All right, we got one more story here, and I think it's only appropriate for you to report on this.
Are you suggesting that I am the resident Apple fanboy. So when we were at CES, one of the things that we reported about was how many TV manufacturers reported that they were going to be supporting AirPlay 2 in upcoming models. Vizio, interestingly enough, announced the most broad support in their smart displays, in that they were going to not only make this available in their 2019 models, but also go as far back as 2016 in some of their models. Right. Well, Vizio is now taking signups for people interested in beta testing their AirPlay 2 support, which I think they're calling SmartCast 3 with AirPlay 2, because that just rolls off the tongue. And the intent is that this will be publicly available by the second quarter of this calendar year. So this is happening pretty rapidly, probably faster than some of us may have anticipated.
Yeah, and it's obviously really awesome to see them go all the way back to the 2016 model year TVs. So this is kind of a split story between us, because I have a 2016 model year Vizio TV, but you have all the Apple stuff.
Yeah, so I could theoretically cast to your television if I come visit you someday.
Yeah, which we're not going to do, because we're just going to use my Xbox if we were to watch anything. So, yeah.
Hey, I have a quick update. I went looking to find out if it was possible to use the services that you subscribe to through Amazon on other platforms. And what I learned was that I don't know. However, their terms of use do provide instructions on how to serve a subpoena or other legal process.
Okay.
Seriously, I think my faith in humanity just went down a significant notch.
Wow. Totally not expecting that one.
Right.
Interesting. Well, let me save us by transitioning to everyone's favorite topic, especially yours, gaming.
Absolutely.
Right. It's your favorite topic because it means I get to talk for a little while. All right. This week, not a ton, but and I don't mean to make this sound like an I told you so sort of moment, and not to Richard, to NVIDIA directly, but NVIDIA, their CEO this week on a financial call, they said they used the words, the fourth quarter was like a punch in the gut. That's, I don't want to say how bad it was, because they still made $2.2 million. I don't know. Now I forget the actual number. It doesn't matter. Lots and lots and lots of money. But it was less, a lot less than they expected. And here's what they had to say. It was due to lower than expected GPU sales, including certain high-end graphics cards based on NVIDIA's new Turing architecture. No kidding. When you guys announced these GPUs and said, yeah, the cheapest one is going to be $850, us, and I'm not just going to say us, but so many people said, are you out of your mind? How do you expect to sell these for even more money than the ones that are already on the market and have been on the market for a while,
right,
and are already overpriced?
Like, right,
how are you going to sell these for even more? Now, I know it's not just the fact that they released these ridiculously expensive GPUs. It's also because the cryptocurrency market, like, nosedived in 2018. But still, you went from releasing $600 high-end video cards to $1,100 high-end video cards. And while they're awesome, they have all of this awesome new technology that almost no games are using yet. And then wondered why no one bought them? Duh.
Yeah. I have no pity, no concern. I really, you know, this is... Everybody can argue that this was the free market at work, but I think this was the free market to extreme.
Right.
And I think that this is, you know, it's biting them back now. And now they need to adjust, right? They need to adjust their business plans, because my bet is they saw this growth and they created estimates of earnings based on this growth being sustained.
Right. Right. And it just wasn't, not even close. So, I mean, they have done some things to help. They did announce a new lower end card. You know, when they first announced the new series, they only had the 2070, the 2080, and the 2080 Ti. They've now announced the 2060, and that's going to start at about $350. So way less than the introductory price of the 2070. And street value prices on these cards has started to come down some. Now, you can get a 2070 now for under, and in some cases significantly under $800, but that's still so much money. So much money. And AMD has pretty, well, I don't know. I can't say what AMD's comparable video cards cost. But if you're just looking at 1080p level of gaming, an AMD 570, the RX 570 card, those can be had for under $200, and you're going to get really good 1080p gaming. Or you can spend $1,200 on an RTX 2080 Ti. No thanks. All right, that's it for our gaming news this week, because, you know, we do normally cover the Xbox Live games with Gold, the free games that you can get on Xbox if you pay for their subscription service. And we cover the PlayStation Plus free games that you can get for paying for their subscription service. But I don't know that we've ever gotten any feedback at all covering these two things. So why take up time in the show? So we're just not going to, unless you guys say that you want it back. So if you want me covering these things, let me know. You notice how I actually said me and not us there? Yeah.
Hey, I occasionally cover the games with Gold, because while you were skipping them, I was downloading them.
Well, that's true. Oh, Paul asked a really great question. I can't believe I forgot to put this in the notes. Last week we were talking, a little bit more gaming news here. Paul asked a really good question last week when I was talking.
About Sea of Thieves?
No, not about Sea of Thieves. When I was talking about the Razer Turret keyboard and mouse, and I mentioned that it's the only keyboard that's going to be released this year with the Xbox button. And Paul said, well, doesn't the Windows key work as an Xbox button? And I said, I don't know. Like, it seems like it should, but I don't know. And I hadn't actually tried. So the next day, I tried. And sure enough, it does. So
nice.
So having that Xbox button on the keyboard, the only thing it's really getting you is that I imagine you can use it to turn on the Xbox. Because if you grab a controller that has an Xbox button, you can long press on that button and it'll turn on your Xbox also. So it'll probably do that for you, but that's maybe not as big of a deal. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. I'm not sure. It's not something you're going to do as often as pulling up the Xbox guide while you're playing, though. So, yeah, that's kind of a really big deal. And I'm glad that Paul asked the question last week.
But still, technically, that keyboard is the only keyboard where you can get the Xbox button on it.
Yes.
Technically,
yes,
it still is.
And it's still a phenomenal keyboard. And it's also got the one USB dongle for the keyboard and the mouse. So that also made me wonder, what about like the Logitech devices where they've got that unifying receiver that'll work with a keyboard and a mouse? I've got those. So I pulled the USB dongle out of my PC, plugged it into my Xbox. It worked. Both the keyboard and the mouse worked. So they're not the only ones doing that either. But if you want to try and do some mix and match sort of stuff, you might end up with multiple dongles depending on your provider. So is the Razer Turret like the be all end all, the only thing that'll do a lot of this stuff? It's not the only one that'll do some of this stuff, at least not the most important things, but it is still a phenomenal keyboard and mouse. So there you go. I think that probably answers Paul's question. And then that allows us to get out of the gaming section and into what's going on in Richard's Entertainment Center.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, so last week we talked about how I'm trying to figure out how to handle the fact that my Drobo, with all my movies on it, is dead again. And I am not necessarily inclined to stick with Drobo after this has happened, what, twice now? So I mentioned that I would probably be reaching out to Dave McCabe and the folks over at the Reset Forums. And sure enough, Dave came through and posted on Twitter a link to a thread that will help me better find out what my NAS options are. And there's been some feedback on that as well, some conversation around that. So I want to thank Dave and company for weighing in there. And seriously, if anyone has any thoughts or ideas, so far it seems like people love the QNAP stuff, and I get that. And I will definitely look into that. But I'm curious what the different options are that people are using to house their big collections of media, because I think I'm going to be looking for a new home for mine. But thank you for following up on that, Dave, and others. And then I don't know if I had mentioned last time the irony of my Drobo drive dying when it did was that I had just received the replacement Blu-ray drive from LG after all the hassle they put me through to get that replacement. So now I have that sitting on my desk waiting to, you know, do something. Hey, speaking of terrible LG customer experiences, last night when I was watching television, there was a pharmaceutical commercial on whatever channel that I happened to be watching. It was probably the news, because they seem to love playing those minute and a half long pharmaceutical commercials. And while I was watching the commercial and switching around on my remote, my TV brought up a sidebar ad as an overlay while I was doing other stuff. Like, I had clearly backed off of the show because I was like trying to navigate around with my remote. And so the TV then overlaid a banner ad of that very product that they were advertising on that commercial.
Wow.
And on the top right hand side, it said, find out more about LG Live Plus. maybe how to turn it off.
Right. Wow.
How obnoxious is that?
That's, I'm kind of impressed by the technology, actually.
Yeah, I could not believe that. That was just, yeah, I was not in a good mood after that. All right, so I have been watching some television. I haven't really been keeping up with stuff as much as usual because work has been crazy, crazy busy. But I have watched a couple half-hour shows, The Conners, Modern Family, and Big Bang Theory. I'm caught up on all of those. Still keeping up with Game of Thrones, wrapping up season 5 now. Last week's episode of The Orville, another great episode. Really enjoyed that. Shameless and The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, two premium shows that are exclusive to their respective sources, their networks or services, have started up again. So I'm watching those again now. Celebrity Big Brother. Yeah, I still watch that. It is as annoying as I expected it to be with some of the people that are on that show. I will probably watch it through because I like it, but wow, so much unnecessary angst. And we started watching Grace and Frankie. This is the half-hour no-laugh-track comedy with... I am going to have problems with this. Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin. And they've done like 4 or 5 seasons of this now. And somebody at work told Edward that it was awesome and we should watch it. So we're starting to watch that. It's interesting. It's fun. It is pretty serious in the first couple of episodes for being a comedy, but you can see that how they could have a lot of fun with it. And so we'll probably stick with that and see how that goes. And then finally, this weekend, I finally watched Incredibles 2, which was a lot of fun. I always liked the Pixar movies, and I hadn't had a chance to see this yet. Even though when the kids were over a couple of weeks ago, they started watching it, but I wasn't able to see it because I was busy, I don't know, cleaning up or something. But it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. So I highly recommend it if you liked the first film. And that's it for me.
I got to see most of The Incredibles 2 recently. Most of it, because they did it as the, it was a school movie night for my kid's school. So all of us went and watched, and I was excited to see it. I've never actually seen all of the first one either, despite the fact that we own it. But when we got it, my oldest was my only, and she was, I don't know, 4 or something like that. And we put it in and started watching, and it starts off with like this big gunfight and everything. And we're like, maybe not for you as a 4-year-old.
Yep.
And I think we tried it again a few years later, and she just wasn't all that interested. She ended up, she's now 10. She did end up liking Incredibles 2. She didn't love it. I thought it was pretty good, but I ended up having to take the youngest, the 5-year-old, out of the theater because once everybody started getting the creepy green eye thing going on,
scary.
She got super freaked out.
Yeah, absolutely. Didn't want to watch it anymore. Yeah, and you know, it's funny. I see more and more of that in these kids' movies, and now that we end up watching a lot of these films with our niece and nephew, it's funny. I'm so sensitive, I guess, about that. And I'm constantly watching to see, you know, are they enjoying it? Are they scared? You know, can I throw in a laugh to help them understand this is funny, not scary? And I feel like Pixar is pushing that more and more and more in their films. Like Toy Story 3, for example. Oh, I thought Toy ending. Story 3 was really, really scary near the end.
Right. And just heart-wrenching.
Well, and then the very end is just, it just tears your heart out. Yeah.
Right.
But, but yeah, so, but, you know, they tell good stories. The thing that I would say about this is that if you like the first, you will probably like the second. If you like the first because of its novelty in being so Bond-like, they backed away from that quite a bit in Incredibles 2. And this is much more Megamind-like than Incredibles-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, I have a little bit of updates here. So I watched The Good Place season 3 finale. It was good.
Wait, wasn't season finale or season mid-season?
Finale. No, season finale.
How is that possible?
I don't understand how TV works anymore, Richard. But they started in the fall. They took their mid-season, which I would think a mid-season break happens at about the halfway point of the season.
Right.
But then it came back in January for 3 or 4 episodes. I don't know. But it's done now for the season. It was a good episode. It wasn't a great episode. They did some things that I wasn't expecting from this type of show, and they did them really well. But in terms of just, you know, really nailing all the humor and all that stuff and making me like really long for what's happening next, it didn't quite set it up nearly as well as some of the previous seasons, I felt.
Okay.
I'm still going to watch the next season. But it wasn't as good as I had hoped for. I watched it through Plex, but recorded it with the HD Home Run DVR, which actually worked correctly, unlike the Plex DVR. So why did I watch it through Plex? Well, I had an exhausting weekend. And Sunday, we got home from some stuff in the evening. I knew it was like half hour-ish until we'd be putting the kids to bed. And I went, you know, and just basically collapsed into my bed and thought, I could watch The Good Place right now on my phone, I guess. So I did and thought, well, I recorded this with HD Home Run. Let's use that. But the streaming wasn't working the greatest. Maybe it was my distance between where my bedroom is and where the Wi-Fi access point is. I don't know. It wasn't working the greatest. So then I thought, I've got Plex pointed at this storage location, so let's try it. And it worked out great. So as we've talked about before, combining Silicon Dust HD Home Run DVR with Plex kind of gives you most of the stuff that you're looking for in a DVR, because you can watch all of your recorded stuff anywhere. Mm-hmm. If you've got Plex set up to do that, and it'll handle all of the transcoding and all of that stuff to make it work out really well. So it did. And I was happy, really, really happy with that.
Cool.
On the gaming side, I didn't get to play a ton. Like I said, it's a really, really busy weekend. Got to play a little bit of NHL, and I played a little bit more of The Division, trying to get, back into the swing of that game before the next one comes out in March. I mentioned some of that on the last episode, and man, that game was just so good, and it's still fun to play. So you're probably going to hear me talking about more of The Division over the coming weeks, because it may be 3 years old, but I'm still really loving it. So I might be coming back for more and more of that.
Cool.
All right, well, that is it for what's going on in my entertainment center. We don't have any more big announcements or anything this week, so that's going to do it for the show. If you want to get a hold of us, you can do that in a lot of different ways. Twitter, I think, is the most fun. It's the most direct and maybe the most real-time-ish way to talk to us. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I, MediaZone. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ, and you can find all of the rest of our contact information, along with the show notes for this show, all of the links to all the stories we talked about over at thedigitalmediazone.com. We've also got some other podcasts for you to check out. If you're really into smart home technology, Richard, you do a show called Home On. What's going on with Home On?
I do. The show that is really, really late to get out is the CES episode that we recorded with a number of people on the floor while we were in Vegas. Still trying to get that out. Like I said, things have been really, really crazy. And we also have this problem where we come back from CES and we're kind of a little bit burnt out from it all. So I am still pushing to get that out. And then I have scheduled to record this week. We are going to be talking with the folks from Leadvance. And if you don't remember, that is the company behind the Sylvania brand of smart bulbs and accessories that work with HomeKit and with Zigbee. So we are looking forward to that discussion, and that'll be coming out in a couple of weeks.
Cool. And then the other podcast that we have over here at the Digital Media Zone is called Story Players. It's one that I record with Joe D'Estasio, and we do a spoiler cast of video games. We just released a new episode last week covering episode one of Life is Strange 2. All of the numbers get confusing. Sorry. Life is Strange 2, episode one. That was released last week. And then tomorrow night, we're getting together to record another episode. This one will be The Walking... Here's more numbers for you. The Walking Dead, season 4, episode 3. So that episode just came out last week, I think. So we played through it over the weekend. We're recording our spoiler cast for that tomorrow. So that should be up in a few days after that. So probably before the next episode of Entertainment 2.0 hits. So if you've been playing through The Walking Dead, we'll have you covered there. And if you haven't checked out Life is Strange 2 yet, well, get on it and then go check out that spoiler cast too. All right, well, that's it for our other podcast. If you love this show, it's even more fun if you join us while we're recording it. We do this all live using Mixer. It's all up on the DMZ for you to watch. And there's a chat room. So lots of great feedback from some of you tonight. And hopefully we'll see you the next time we do this. We're normally live Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, but you can follow us on Twitter to know for sure when we're going to be live, because that's going to do it for episode 474. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.
Oh, no. Why does this always happen to me? Right as I'm about to scroll down the window, Chrome signs me out of the Google Doc. Isn't that great? Don't you love that? It's awesome.
I think we can edit that part out.